Welcome to the Watch OK Please podcast, a podcast where three friends try to convince each other to devote what little time they have left to watch more TV and or movies than they've ever wanted to watch. Please join us while we argue about our media cues and waste everyone's valuable time on things that just don't matter. Hey Watchers, it's Nyan, and thank you for joining us on another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. This week, for our feedback segment, infamous curmudgeon Lev rejoins us on the pod for feedback on Season 9 of American Horror Story, which is entitled 1984. All of American Horror Story, including Season 9, is available on Hulu. As usual, the feedback segment does get a little spoilery, so please be warned if you are trying to avoid spoilers for Season 9 of American Horror Story. And later in the episode, I pitch the Wine-tastic NBC sitcom Grand Crew, which is available to stream on Hulu, Peacock, and a bunch of other NBC sites like Bravo and others. The episodes that I'm recommending that Dan and Scott check out are episodes 1 through 5 of Season 1. Also, I have one minor correction for the pitch. I actually thought Sweet Clyde was an actual Harlem Globetrotter, but it turns out he is a fictional Harlem Globetrotter that only exists in the Futurama universe. Sorry about that. As always, please rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts if you like the show, or hate it. And then you can feel free to hit us up on our Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook pages if you're bored or just looking for something to do. Also, if you have a movie or show you want us to watch, or just something random you want us to mention on air, please leave us a voicemail at on our Anchor page at anchor.fm/watchokplease. All right, Watchers, go ahead and pour yourself a glass of your favorite wine and enjoy the show. Hey everybody, it's Nyan. We are back for feedback on American Horror Story Season 9, 1984. We brought Lev back because we want him to hear all the random nonsense that we have to say about the show now that we've seen it. This show is available on Hulu. We're specifically talking about Season 9 of American Horror Story. And so guys, what did you think?
Dan, would you like to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. As we stated before, I'm not so much of a big horror person usually, but I actually wanted to find out what happened at the end. So I pushed through and I watched all through 1984, and I think the episode after starts 1985. But for what it was, I thought it was a pretty serviceable. You know, I don't know if I'll continue on with American Horror Story in general, but I thought that this, like Lev pointed out before, that I thought it was very, you know, good for what it was. It was a complete story, and you know, it was done very well. I mean, it got a little campy at points, like it was mentioned or whatnot, but there were a lot of really excellent references to the 80s and to that end. So I really enjoyed that. But you know, I was going to claim, you know, at the very top of the show, I was going to claim the virgin rule of not getting killed, but that wasn't on the menu for that very first scene. So.
Oh yeah, Lev, I've got an ear. You're definitely gonna get an earful, multiple earfuls,
please,
about this whole thing. Because I actually, well, let's be real. I was pleasantly surprised. I did not go into this with a lot of hope that I would actually enjoy this. Because the camp factor you mentioned can go either way. It could be good or it could be bad. But yes. I thought they knocked it out of the park. I actually made it to episode 4, so I'm 4 episodes in. Because I was just genuinely interested in watching how this kept going, because it kept getting more and more interesting. There were things that actually kind of grabbed me right from the beginning, which I did not expect. And maybe it's because this show clearly doesn't take the 80s seriously, and neither do I. So I get along with this show. I feel seen. Because that first scene at the aerobic studio was ultimately, I think they ripped it exactly from the movie Perfect, with John Travolta and Jamie Lee Curtis. I don't
know if you guys know that. Wow, yeah, I could see that.
Good reference. Wow, I didn't make that one.
Like 99% sure that's where they got it from. It was crazy. But yeah, I really ended up liking this a lot more than I ever expected. What about you, Scott?
Well, I think the best I can say is that I very much enjoyed the soundtrack.
I too enjoy the soundtrack. There was a lot of, I mean, and even as, you know, you go through the later episodes, they get into some pretty crazy references too. It's pretty funny.
So yes, I really enjoyed the songs that they selected, but I also very, very rarely watch any horror things, either actual horror stuff or horror parodies, I guess maybe you could call this. It took me a while to figure out that the fact that the plot was incredibly ridiculous was done on purpose, I suppose.
Definitely, yes.
Okay. It took me a while to figure that out. And yeah, the very first scene was pretty shocking when he pretty much murders an entire cabin full of teenagers.
I got to say, actually, regarding the opening scene, I did not remember that it was opening with that. Otherwise, I would have said it ahead of time. I just plainly forgot that that was like the very first thing you see.
Yeah, that was a little shocking. But so
I had to set the tone, I guess. Yeah.
Well, I guess, yeah. In a sense, it was kind of like the Breakfast Club with each of the main characters who were each playing a particular 80s stereotype.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that was interesting to see that. And seeing Matthew Morrison be completely unlike his character on Glee was pretty cool.
Yeah, I was going to say, why is Matthew Morrison in this and is a sex symbol nonetheless? Oh, that's right, because Ryan Murphy, you know, created this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's the connection there. Yep, and seeing Carrie Fisher's daughter as Montana.
Oh. Yep.
Yeah, that was Billy Lord.
Yeah, as Billy Lord. Yeah.
Yep. So that was pretty cool, but I'm not sure I really liked it that much overall. But I actually did watch episode 3. Because I just wanted to figure out if the plot was going to go anywhere that made any kind of sense whatsoever. And at the end of episode 3, I decided, no, it did not.
Wait, you didn't think the plot made any sense?
Nope.
It seemed pretty coherent. Like, it just, they were clearly, I didn't think it was completely nonsensical. It just was jumping all over the place kind of as a parody. So,
yeah, I guess, which I know, I guess, was the point, but it was hard for me to wrap my head around that.
So, I mean, I think the plot did make a certain amount of sense. It just what didn't appeal to you, it sounds like.
Yeah. That's what it sounds like to me. I mean, I think that they tried, because I saw the whole thing in its entirety, I can say that, you know, they definitely wanted to unravel the story in a different way. And I think, like I said, this is definitely more in the horror trope, you know, kind of storytelling aspect in that regard. And so, so it is more about the thrills and the shocks than it is about, you know, I think having, you know, a completely well-woven story in some ways. So, yeah.
Yeah. If you're looking for plot holes here, I mean, that's not what this is about. This, I think that Dan got it right. This is more about kind of like taking, it's like the ultimate B movie. You're just kind of playing with this, with the ridiculousness of it and seeing how far you can take it. I would say that that's probably a pretty good description of the entire season as a whole. Is like they make one ridiculous plot choice after another, and they find a way to weave it together in an entertaining way that kind of keeps you engaged and wanting to know what happens next.
Mm. Yeah, that's what kind of kept me going with it, because I was planning just to give it the 2 episodes and call it a day, but they seem to, at least from my perspective, keep it interesting enough with the random things that made me want to keep watching it. I'm probably just going to probably get all the way to the end. I mean, if nothing else, I want to try and see if they ever calculate how much blood they put on that was covered throughout the entire series. Like, do they have an amount? Cause it was like Wet Hot American Summer, except it was more like Wet Hot American Murder.
Yes. very well put.
Well played. Well played.
And the fact that we had multiple serial killers kind of helped me as well. People know we're getting into spoiler territory on the feedback. So,
yeah,
we can just start to get into it. I do have to say, if we're talking about random people who are related to random people, because you guys mentioned Carrie Fisher's daughter, who I didn't even know what her name was. But did anyone look up the gas station, the guy, the gas station attendant from the beginning?
I did.
Okay.
Oh, who is he?
So he's Patrick Swayze's brother?
Yes.
Wow.
I didn't know Patrick Swayze had a brother. It was really random. I actually thought it was Shea Whigham for a second, but because he just shows up in everything randomly. But it turns out that's Patrick Swayze's brother. And
yeah,
I mean, I think one of the things I missed about now pumping my own gas now that I no longer live in New Jersey is that when I'm getting gas, no one tells me that I'm going to die, which would be helpful if they would just let me know that. And no one does that in Massachusetts.
Yeah, and speaking of another person in the series as well, it was Mitch Pileggi. Not too long in the series, mind you, but you know he's obviously Walter Skinner from the X-Files, most famously probably, and more recently, you know, he was also Rama Khan in Supergirl, and as a sneak peek to an upcoming pitch from me, he's actually in another series that I'm going to be pitching soon, so it's going to be interesting.
So clearly, I did not do my homework ahead of time to figure out who all these actors were, because I didn't recognize half of them, and I had no idea Billy Lord was Carrie Fisher's daughter, or how Mitch Pileggi's Patrick Swayze's brother. Like that's completely.
No, I think Mitch Pileggi's another guy.
He's a different guy. Yeah, that, I think his name is like Don Swayze. I think his name is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So what I want to know is, was he in any movies with Frank Stallone?
That's worth an IMDb check. I have no idea, but it's entirely possible. Because he's kind of like been acting forever.
Yeah.
Well, that reminds me, there's a great game that Adam Van Jecture was doing for a while. And it basically, you'd have to give him either two actors or two movies. And then you basically have to click through IMDb a la 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. So you have to basically start off with one movie and you have to click through an actor, director, producer, et cetera, someone who's associated with that movie to kind of click through and get to, you know, that other actor or movie at the end of it. It's kind of fun. You have to, you time it, of course, and, you know, fastest time, you know, wins kind of thing.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that does sound cool. So what I was going to say was, it seemed very clear to me that all of the characters in this TV show or in this season have never seen a horror movie.
Nope. You don't want to be in town this summer. It could cost you your life.
I was confused as to whether they'd ever showered before, because who randomly walks into a shower with a toothpick in their mouth? Ray, who had a toothpick in his mouth almost the entire time.
Yep.
Like, that's it. I loved how ridiculous they made these people.
But remember, Nyan, Xavier trained at Stella Adler with the method.
Oh, that's true. That's right.
Yes, he did. In addition to being a former gay porn star.
Yeah, that was wild.
Yeah, that was just crazy. Was yeah, crazy. I guess, Nyan, you're maybe right that it wasn't that it didn't make sense. It was just I wasn't expecting or thinking that they would go to these like different ridiculous directions that they ended up going.
Yeah, and that makes sense, because I don't think any of the other American horrors, I get the impression that they went so, aren't so clearly parroting something. I think they tend to be a bit more grounded and not making fun of a genre. Is that right, Lev? Have you seen the other ones?
So I tried sitting through the several of the other ones, not all of them, and honestly just didn't get into them for a variety of reasons. For example, like I tried sitting through season two, but after like three episodes or so in, it just got super annoying to me because they were, I think they were trying to make it scary, but it wasn't. It was more annoying than scary. I did not, I can't say that they weren't parroting real, like actual stories the way that 1984 was. There's some element of parody in there, but not anywhere near to this extent.
Okay.
That's why I like 1984, is because it's clearly like, I just recognize so much familiar ideas. It's, keep using the word tropes, but it fits, that it was just fun to see them interact this way.
Oh, totally. Because I mean, just the fact that they truly dug into that whole, the trope, I'm going to use the word because it's a great word, to that if you have sex in our movie, you will die.
Yep.
And that sex is disgusting, and you will get murdered, and you will deserve the murder.
Yeah, like, well, that was really the whole thing. That. It's like you go into this thinking, you know, they're all you know, at an aerobics class, and they're quote unquote in fit, they're shape. In shape in that regard, and reality, you know, that on the surface they seem like, you know, generally attractive people, etc. and whatnot, and then the reality is that they are laden with sin, and then that inherently that sin is what leads to their demise.
Exactly. And if you are a car mechanic and you are working on a car in the pouring rain in the middle of the night, I mean, I think you're just asking for it at that point.
Yeah, but they had to drop the car in him like that. That's horrible, man.
If he's just trying to make ends meet and work overtime, why does he deserve to die?
Yeah, there you go. Like I said, he's never seen a horror movie, apparently.
Nope.
Well, apparently he's seen enough to warn them not to come in and come to the camp.
That's true.
That's
true. He knew that much, but forgot to apply those setups to himself.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's part of the tradition. Somebody has to warn you to stay out of the cabin in the woods. It's got to be done.
Yep. Yeah, but again, and for those of you who do like watch further, the horror element begins to merge a little bit of more supernatural kinds of stuff. So I really dug that part of it at least.
Oh yeah, and I noticed that kind of picked up around episode 4.
Yep.
Towards the end of it, and I appreciated the fact that I'm assuming that the Night Stalker is a reference to the actual Night Stalker, Richard Ramirez. It felt like it was too on point not to be.
Yeah, so I totally agree.
Their embrace of satanic panic was also appreciated. The one thing I want to make sure I ask before we move on is that, so add this little bit of a segment called When Did Lev Figure It Out? So Lev has famously been able to figure out the ends of movies and TV shows before they end, or so he claims. So for American Horror Story 1984, Lev, when did you figure it all out?
That one is hard to say. There is a major plot point that happens somewhere in the middle. I don't remember exactly which episode, but it was some of the elements of it were like I figured out part of it pretty quickly. We'll say roughly around episode 2 or so, but the main part of it was so over the top and like ridiculous that I didn't see it coming.
Hmm.
There are additional like plot points that happen. I'm trying to avoid spoilers. There are additional plot points that happen all over the place that, it was hit and miss just because of the sheer ridiculousness of some of like how they unfolded that I just like, wait, you're doing this? What?
Yeah.
Gotcha. So
yeah.
I'll leave it at that. So when did I figure it out? I figured out one of the big plot points roughly halfway through episode 2.
Oh, okay.
Well done, man.
Halfway through episode 2.
Yes.
Interesting.
Wow. Yeah. I think that's really impressive, man. So, I had a feeling I thought people are going to die. Like that much I knew. But beyond that, I didn't really have much of an inkling. So.
Well, yeah, that's not a spoiler. That's yes. Yeah.
So there was one line that really cracked me up early on too was a storm's coming. You don't want to be in the water with that lightning rod.
Nice.
Yeah, I just love how it becomes like this like crazy trope for the rest of the movie now that Matthew Morrison is like insanely hung.
Apparently.
Oh yeah, that was that whole shower scene. Well, I don't know. As someone who's actually showered in like with groups of guys at a sleepaway camp, it never goes like I didn't spend a lot of time looking at other guys' genitalia. Like that's just not a thing I did. But hey, with Matthew Morrison, and you've got a hole that's conveniently placed.
Right. But again, because he was, lusting after that, you saw what happened to him.
Exactly.
Sinners beware. Going back to Scott's point about the soundtrack, I mean, there were some really awesome ones here for me. Def Leppard Photograph was early on. That was awesome. Obviously, then down the road, you get Pointer Sisters, you get Man Eaters in there, Hush Hush. And that was pretty awesome, but really odd choices sometimes in the scenes. I thought it was also funny that when they were doing Montana's flashback later, this is much later in the series, that they actually are playing Billy Idol's Rebel Yell, which is funny because the actress is Billy Lord, kind of thing. So I thought that was kind of a funny thing right there. So
cool.
Once I do finish this, because I think I will go all the way through and I'll finish the whole thing because I kind of want to see how it all ends, is that it kind of is inspiring me to actually check out the movie Sleepaway Camp, which I know had to inspire this along I with bet. Friday the 13th. And that one that has like a bit of a twist that I've been spoiled for that, but through listening to a better podcast, How Did This Get Made? But if you guys have the time and the inclination, Sleepaway Camp is available to watch on IMDb TV or Pluto TV for free. And if you're enjoying kind of the ridiculousness of this show, Sleepaway Camp might be worth watching. Because, I mean, it is intended to be a horror movie, but it gets real, real crazy real quick.
And was that actually made in the 80s?
1983, yep.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was very much an inspiration for this. So you can feel it.
Totally.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah. And when you do get to the N9, there's a lot of really classic lines and whatnot that, and even more 80s references that you'll probably despise.
Great. I can't wait. I mean, this is people in the 80s getting murdered, so it's less 80s as time goes by, so maybe right. That's why I appreciate it more.
I noticed direct references also to Ghostbusters, to Beverly Hills Cop, and there's definitely a bunch that come in and out here.
Fair enough. And I think I've been enjoying it because they do it well. It comes off as them doing a very good job of obscuring the 80s as opposed to kind of just lazily throwing random references out there.
Like Jane Fonda?
Yeah. I knew I saw you in the video.
It's like, and then she says, she says, oh, you're the first thing I ever masturbated to. You're a legend.
That was nuts.
That was wild.
Well, I am glad that you found joy in this series. I had some doubts, but I went with it because, you know, gut instinct told me that this would be fun.
Appreciate it. I was pleasantly surprised.
Excellent. So that's what we thought.
Thank you, Lev.
You are very welcome.
Hey guys, it's Nyan, and I am here to pitch the show Grand Crew. It is a sitcom that currently airs on NBC. The first season is out completely, and it's available on Hulu, Peacock, and a bunch of other random streaming NBC-related outlets. I think IMDb actually said it's available on, I think, Telemundo, E! Exclamation point, Sci-Fi. It's everywhere.
Wow.
It's like HPV, but it won't give you cancer, which is great. Okay. Which, I mean, in terms of a show, I don't think you can ask for much more than it just not giving you cancer. Right, guys? I don't think that's much to ask for, right? So
you could say it's a human performance virus.
That's correct. It is a human performance virus. So Grand Crew, what is the show, right? So it is a standard sitcom. I'll give you that. But the thing that drew me to it was that is actually in the first minute or so of the series, because it has Nicole Byer in it, and she is a goddess, and I will watch anything she is in.
You may have already sold me on this already, so
fair enough. Oh, there's more to specifically get you going. This is an easier pitch to Dan than it is to Scott. And so Nicole Byer is in it. Garrett Morris, SNL alum from the original cast, shows up at the beginning and just does an intro and talks about how African-American folks have more layers to them and there's more depth. So the show actually just follows around a group of African-American friends who are professionals in like late 20s, early 30s, who hang out in LA and just live their lives essentially. And that sounds super generic. I get that. However, the jokes are actually come quick and fast, which you'd expect from Nicole Byer, but they also come from the other actors who some of you may have heard of, some you may not have. But what I think is a little sneakier is that there are folks whose voice you have heard elsewhere, but are actual actors in this. For example, are you guys familiar with Carl Tart?
No, I never heard that name.
Name sounds familiar, but I probably don't know.
So he was a writer on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. But he actually is in this actual show as one of the stars, and he does a great job. Between him and Nicole, like, they are amazing. And then there's a bartender that comes in later who's also great. Everyone's awesome, but those three, the Nicole Byer, Carl Tart, and I think it's Gracie Mercedes. I'm probably mispronouncing your name. I apologize for that. Those three are my favorite throughout the show. They take this, what could be sort of a standard sitcom, and add more depth to it, because as Garrett Morris mentions in the beginning, there is more depth to everyone than the random stereotypes that there are on their faces. So the things that you honestly see, you expect to see from people when you just run into them on a random sitcom, show actually takes an active attempt to get deeper than that. It was created by Phil Augusta Jackson, someone who was also producer and writer on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Right. He's done a bunch of other stuff, and he does such a good job with this. It's a well thought out, nuanced sitcom, but it still manages to have really well structured jokes and fun little quirks with all the characters that I think it keeps it interesting. So as may or may not be obvious, and because I'm not as much of a wino as other folks, but Dan, I think you will enjoy this because they spend most of their time at a wine bar.
There you go. But just for the record, before we go into the wine trend any further, I just be 100% clear here. Even though this is set in L.A., and Nyan had mentioned with the name of Garrett, he is not an F-boy.
I was really starting to wonder about that.
Oh, you were worried that this might turn into F-boy Island?
Yes.
Just because the name Garrett is just triggering at this point for us, I think.
Oh, fair enough. No, don't worry. No Garrett's. No, it was OG Jared's. Don't worry about it. You guys are good. not a concern.
Okay. You know how many F-boys there are in L.A., as I imagine there are.
Yes, exactly. I know I'm familiar with your feud with L.A.
Some club promoters might occasionally frequent wine bars, so you still might need to be careful.
That's true, but I actually don't think there's a club promoter that shows up in this one. It's kind of like a standard sitcom in that sense, but it has enough of a hook and character development to make it more interesting. Because these guys I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just thinking, I was going to go a question about the wine bar, but go ahead, Ben.
Oh no, please, because I'm gonna get further into why I think it works.
I think that, you know, that there is definitely a subconscious obsession with a lot of the sitcom viewing public and how they're drawn to sitcoms that either circle around or sometimes feature favorite drinking holes of the characters in question. I mean, I think one of the longest running of all time, of course, is Cheers. Obviously situated directly around a bar. But I think that, you know, if you think about a lot of other series, there's always like an establishment that they go to. Where, again, regardless if it's the diner / luncheonette with Seinfeld, you know, but there's also tons of other series that all kind of have, you know, one of the scenes be at that's a bar or a restaurant or some type of place. Yeah.
Oh, fair enough. But rest assured, this is not Black Cheers. This is
no.
This is a really well thought out, I think, which works on its own independently. Cheers doesn't quite fit what the show is.
And the title alone within itself kind of speaks to that, I think.
Oh, agreed. Yeah, 100%. Because they do get into the wine stuff a little bit. Like, they touch on it pretty well. In a way that isn't pretentious, but it clearly acknowledges what's going on. And that's actually why I think why I'm going to recommend the episodes in the order that I do.
Excellent.
I was just wondering, why did you feel that this show stands out amongst other sitcoms that you've seen?
So that's a good question. I think it was because of the nature of the writing. Like, the jokes are smarter, the jokes are well put together, the actors sell them better, as opposed to just, I don't know, I feel like everything I've randomly run across on CBS, all the Chuck Lorre stuff isn't working for me. I don't know if it ever would, but that coupled with the actors themselves, the Nicole Byers, the Carl Tarts, and the other actors as well, they all elevated this. And I mean, there is an element of also appreciating one Brooklyn Nine-Nine and supporting any Brooklyn Nine-Nine alumni, because the Nine-Nine is amazing. And
Nine-Nine.
And ultimately, I appreciated the representation here, because it was, this was very purposely a show about getting into, like a sitcom, showing that African-American folks are more complex than just these random stereotypes that are often depicted on other shows. So that was kind of awesome.
Interesting. Is there anything that you think that either Scott or me or another viewer out there might have a challenge with?
You know, it's interesting. It's a challenge. I always see a challenge as something that will be something that we could try and find a way to work around. But I don't find this series particularly challenging. I found it very comfortable. I found it very, very straightforward. So and as long as you're comfortable with a sitcom format, it's pretty easy to digest, and it's enjoyable. But I don't feel like it panders and it dumbs things down like I feel like the Chuck Lorre stuff does. So I actually don't think there are many challenges to entry to this particular show.
Cool. It's pretty interesting. I mean, because I think that for me, I do like to see different slices of sitcoms in this regard, because I think that there is a lot of some formulaicness that happens in some series out there, especially if they revolve around a single family, for example. And, there are some tropes that are kind of repeated over and over again, and I think that it's important to kind of, as a viewer, it's good to shift your mindset every now and then. And this, I can't speak for Scott, but I don't think I've watched anything in this kind of ilk in a long time, if ever. So I'm definitely gonna see what this has to offer.
Yeah, sitcoms is not something that, at least recently, I've watched. I don't know if I've watched any really. But it's something I certainly have watched in the past, but this seems like a different approach to it. So I'm interested to see how it takes on this new or different approach to a classic, or like a classic type of show that has been on for a while.
I actually think that's interesting, because I noted on your list of pending shows, you've got Dairy Girls down there, and you confirmed you watched Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. So you don't particularly opposed to sitcoms per se, but why do you feel like you've turned away from them? Or just not watching them as much?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know if it's any reason, specific reason. And Dairy Girls and Kimmy Schmidt are both, I guess you would say that they're sitcoms, huh? I don't really think of them in the same way as, say, like Full House or Cheers.
Well, I mean, could you say that the backdrop of at least Kimmy Schmidt, for example, is a little bit different? Right. Maybe, there's a sitcom as a global is one thing, but I think maybe traditional sitcom, I think, is more of an apt term, maybe.
Or maybe even just the lack of a live studio audience. Because I'm thinking of stuff like Friends, like there is a character named Sherman, and I kept thinking of Sherman Hemsley randomly. So like going back to the Jeffersons, like not having that single cam live studio audience setup does feel a little different.
Yeah, and also not to be confused with the Shermanator.
That's right. Yeah, that's correct. Very different Sherman. Actually, the Sherman's awesome. The Sherman in the show is a bloody delight.
Or to be confused with Nat Sherman.
Oh yeah. Oh, I was just talking about those the other day. That's funny.
Or General Dottie and Sherman.
Yes. What about Tecumseh Sherman?
Or the general from the Civil War?
Correct, yeah.
Yes, I would think this would be quite different.
Yeah.
So many Shermans, so little time.
Exactly.
Although I have to say, I did watch the beginning of Kimmy Schmidt, but then I kind of lost interest. It just seemed like kind of a repetition of the same kind of plot. Really? Yeah, after a while. So I didn't quite make it till the end.
Interesting.
Yeah. Find it repetitive, per se. But in the... It's a shame you didn't make it to the end, because there is a special that follows up to Kimmy Schmidt that is a choose-your-own-adventure setup, like Black Mirror, Black Mirror thing, Bandersnatch.
Yeah,
Bandersnatch. So you can literally it's a follow-up to the series, and you can literally use your remote to choose your own adventure and follow the story through. It's kind of crazy.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember people talking about that when it came out. Yeah,
do you know what I'm talking about, Scott? Or
I wasn't aware of that, but I think I sort of get the idea. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of amazing. You can literally just be like, should Kimmy go down this path? And then you pick that with your remote and then they have a whole scene for it. It's kind of cool.
Huh. It's like those choose your own adventure books, but in video form.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And I believe there may have been certain adult sites that have comparative choose your own items as well. So
I've heard rumors of those, and they may actually be a thing. I'm not going to confirm or deny.
Well, I guess that would bring a new meaning to instead of must see TV, it's must see Peacock.
That's right. Thankfully, Scott, I think the episodes are pretty straightforward in terms of like the subject matter, and even to the point because they don't jump around too much. So I thought that might be more up your alley in terms of just kind of sticking to a specific topic based on the feedback you've given about stand-up shows. And literally each episode is wine and something. There's wine and therapy, wine and hip hop, wine and whatever the episode's about. It's kind of a fun naming convention that in that sense.
Are these half an hour episodes or hour episodes? What are they?
They're actually 20 minutes.
Okay. So cut off the air time for commercials, et cetera. Yeah.
Yeah, like if you have at Free Hulu, it's 20 minutes. So I was actually thinking about recommending the first five because it's a 10 episode season. I was going to say that is technically under the 2 hour limit because they're all about 20 minutes. So we
could say at least episodes 1 through 4. You're saying,
or 5?
Yeah, 1 through 4, 5 extra credit. You know,
we can call it that. Yeah, but I mean technically it is under the 2 hour limit. So.
Yeah,
I think we should all strive for 5.
Strive for 5.
Number 5 alive.
Or as we like to say, Fiverr.
Hashtag Fiverr. Okay, so you think we should watch episodes 1 through 5 in order?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's helpful. I think maybe you can skip 4 if you want. I think 1 to 5 is the way to go. I actually ended up rewatching them all this afternoon while working. Don't tell my boss, but they're pretty digestible and quick to run through. So I don't think it's going to be too taxing for folks.
This will be also good for me because in case I have to run after a screaming child or something, I can then maybe skim through an episode, put the brakes on that, come back to it after they're in bed, kind of thing. So that'd be I think that digesting wise is probably a little bit easier to digest than something that's a little bit longer. So yeah, that's, I definitely appreciate that on my perspective.
yeah, no worries. I think you'll appreciate it. Scott, in the second episode, there's actually something that they bring up something that kind of touches on a thing you've brought up in the podcast on a regular basis. So I thought it might actually be up your, at least the second episode would be specifically up your alley. I thought it'd be interesting. At least I want to get very curious about your reaction to that.
My eyes should be peeled for that now.
Okay.
Ultimately, not that there isn't always sort of a personal motive to pitching these shows because it's a show that we're very passionate about or very interested in. But I'm also pitching this show. I actually jumped into a bunch of other shows I was going to pitch in that. I want this to get a second season. I think it's good enough and interesting enough of a show to warrant a second season. It's not guaranteed yet because they just finished up the first season fairly recently. And by making you guys watch this, we're adding to their streaming numbers. And so with that great power comes a relatively small amount of responsibility. So I would just ask you, help push this over the edge, because not only being not my debt, but someone else's, all the people who worked on this show will appreciate you. Nicole Byer will appreciate you. Carl Tart will appreciate you. Echo Kellum, who I didn't like before in other things, but I really like in this show, will also appreciate you, and everybody else. Gracie Mercedes, she's great. Even Sashir Zameda, who does a podcast with Nicole Byer, has a random cameo. She'll appreciate you probably. And even if we're not able to get the show renewed, maybe this is an opportunity for everyone to listen to better podcasts than this one, which is all 4 podcasts that I'm aware of that Nicole Byer does. So if you're not enjoying this, go listen to a podcast that Nicole Byer is doing, whether it be about her having best friends, trying to figure out why people won't date her, or about the show 90 Day Fiancé. if you get nothing else from this episode, just listen to a Nicole Byer podcast.
Huh. So not only are we just listening or watching this show because that's like what this podcast is about, but we could be helping a lot of other people in the process.
Yeah. Help people keep their jobs, Scott.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, you know, it could
be the two takes, extra views on net or on Hulu that pushes it over the edge.
Exactly. Again, the way to think of it is this way, is that it takes a team of people to make very excellent wine. And this is no different.
Exactly.
All right.
So so we'll have to see, you know, next episodes if we too will join this grand crew.
Nailed it.
Nailed it. Another reference.
Oh, Nicole Byer reference. Awesome.
Well, that happened, folks, which brings us to the end of another episode of the Watch OK Please podcast. We hope you had a good time listening to us spout more nonsense today, and hope you join us next week for another exercise in futility. In the meantime, please rate and review us on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or just tell a friend about us. Until next week, keep on watching.